You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 24 February, Budget Day. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, I want to chatting with Mia Kruger. I want to ask her that philosophical question. What do you do in a stock you own when valuations get stretched? I mean, we'll find out. We'll ask Mia and get her expert opinion. We're talking with Motus CEO, Osman Arbi, on results, dividends, and selling cars under pandemic. They did all right. They sold 80,000 vehicles. Bidcorp results, Australasia and EMs are returning to normal. And if we look at calendar year 2020, second half, much better, even as many of their markets were heading back into lockdowns. Yesterday's poll, we asked you about Sasol, escaped a huge rights issue. Did it surprise you? 38% of you said yes, really expected one, and that certainly included me. 18% said nope, management are tops. 44% of you are still concerned about the debt. There's a lot of debt there, but there is 70 billion less. But I take the point, there's still a lot of debt on that balance sheet at Sasol. MoneyWeb, now brought to you by Orbvest, a global real estate company that has a hyper-focus on acquiring stable income-producing medical buildings in the USA. Investors use Orbvest's online platform to invest directly into low-risk commercial real estate, primarily in the healthcare niche in the USA, from as little as $5,000. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Steinhaus claimants clash, and the group maintains that not all shareholders are equal. Short answer is some of the big claimants seem to be getting preferential treatment, and that understandably is upsetting, well, the less big claimants. Remember, we chatted last week about it, and it looks like, I mean, they're moving forward, but it's not in a straight line, and it's not as simple as perhaps the sense announcement made it seem. Business Day, Sibanye Stillwater starts its journey into battery minerals. They've launched, they've taken a deal in a Finnish company. It's just over R500,000 that essentially is a lithium miner for batteries. I've long worried about big deals, but yeah, R500,000, and I know this sounds weird, that's not a big deal. That's suitably small. Sibanye can manage that. Morning markets, US mixed. We had S&P up 0.1 and Nasdaq down 0.5%. Asia is red, both Sydney and Tokyo off 1.1%. Commodities mixed with gold 1809, Rand 1455. And top 40, our opening call for the top 40, about 470 odd points green. That's about 0.8%.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Mia Kruger. She is a director, Kruger International. Mia, I appreciate your early morning time. It's budget day, so I thought let's ignore budget for now. We'll be coming later this afternoon. I wanted to come at you with a philosophical question, an investment question in a sense. When you do your homework, you do your digging, you find a stock you like, at a price you like, you enter it, you put it into a portfolio. What then happens if that valuation becomes stretched? Do you take the money and run? Do you sit back and sort of pat yourself in the back and let the dividend flows? What is the process at Kruger International?
Good morning, Simon. Yes, so that's a very good question. I think if we just consider sort of what we've seen over the past couple of years, and if I can bring that in, and then just sort of mm-hmm. what all the research tell us, is that normally winners follow momentum. So if a stock is up, it tends to fuel itself and it tends to run further. And that's what we've been seeing since the GFC about 12 years ago now. And the same story is on the other side. When we look at the valuations and the value stocks, the momentum has been negative for them as well. So the long and the short answer is normally winners tend to follow momentum further up and losers mm-hmm. tend to follow momentum further down. So it's better to hold on to your winners and sell your losers faster. There are various behavioral traits when you consider why people want to hold on to losers and why people think they should sell winners. But mostly, it would be in your best interest to hold your winners when you look at the research.
Carry on.
No. So just to get to what we do, you know, exactly as you said, we follow a very stringent investment process. We focus on diversifying portfolios, whether it is our equity fund or whether it is our balanced or prudential, which is a low multi-asset equity exposure fund. Mm-hmm. We follow the same sort of very stringent investment process where we build the portfolio up out of various asset classes on the balance side or from the equity side, let's focus there, from a very, very broad range of diversified positions. And then from that position, if we've bought something and put it in and it fits the strategy and the market runs with it, there's no need for us to sell it. So if we've got a good position and we bought it at the right price and we are and we see ourselves as long-term investors, then we don't think it's necessary to sell and try and time the market. Definitely not over the shorter term.
And I like your point. I mean, you talk around, you know, winners follow momentum, and that's, we're talking here about price. But the other point, which is in that statement, is that winners tend to carry on winning. And if you've got a stock that's winning, be it whatever, they're going to continue doing it from a business perspective likely as well. Their earnings are probably ahead of their peers, et cetera, et cetera. They're a winning company. They know how to win. They use their status to continue to win. And therefore, it's a stock you still want in your portfolio. You might not be adding to it because of valuations, but you know, a great company is proving its worth.
Absolutely, Simon. And I think, you know, as investment professionals, we often speak we don't distinguish very, very well always between price movement and underlying earnings and value movement within a company when we talk, you know, to people maybe listening to your show, to the radio. Mm-hmm. And that's very important. When you're a long-term investor, the price is what you pay. And what you look at over the long term is whether the company is becoming more valuable, whether the company is actually doing better than it did the day you bought it, whether it's growing in its respective industry, and whether it's adding to its earnings and to its profit. And it's those things that the reasons that you bought the company as a good investment keeps on going right, then it still remains a good investment. Obviously, if something better comes along, a company with greater prospects and mm-hmm. company that has a greater future ahead of it, despite, you know, the fact that you might be in a good company, it might be time to add to that better prospect. So, I mean, it's basically not very difficult. As we know, the whole thing of investments is very simple, but it's not that easy to implement always because people's emotions get in the way. So when you weigh up the prospects of returns on one company and it's higher than another, then you will obviously allocate to the higher return company than you did to the lower one. So those are the sort of things you need to keep in mind when you're an investor. When you're a trader or a speculator, the story is completely different. And I don't think I'm well versed to speak in that area.
No, we'll leave that for the traders out there, but I love your comment. Winners follow momentum, and I think that's 100% spot on. Mia Kruger, Director, Kruger International, appreciate your insights this early morning.
You've worked hard to accumulate wealth, but with these uncertain times, how can you preserve and grow your wealth in a safer place?
Offshore.
While earning regular quarterly dividends in US dollars. The solution is here. Hundreds of investors from across South Africa are investing in specialized medical real estate in the USA, sourced by a highly skilled team who make it easy for you. Orbvest SA, an authorized FSP.
Visit orbvest.com.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Motus CEO Osman Arbery. They had results for the 6 months ending December, saw revenue up 6%, headline earnings up 2%, dividend of R1.60 per share, and free cash flow of almost $4.8 billion. Osman, really appreciate your time today. Your trading update of, what was it, 2nd of February, surprised the market, surprised in a positive sense, in that better than expected. How much of this period, because the numbers, considering pandemic, considering lockdown in the South African and UK markets where you operate, how much was a return to normal? How much was an ability of Motus to sort of adapt to the circumstances and perhaps remove costs from the business?
So firstly, I think if you're asking the question, what's the key success factors, A, it'll be the agile and entrepreneurial management. That means They don't sit in boardrooms, make decisions forever. They're quick. They're on their feet and making quick decisions based on the changing circumstances we find ourselves in, A. B, the integrated model. If we purely sold, bought and sold cars, we'd be in trouble. So what do? We import vehicles. There's four brands, Hyundai, Kia, Renault, Mitsubishi, and we sell those vehicles. Then in the retail section, we have the other brands, Mercedes, Toyota, VW, Ford, Nissan, etc. We buy and sell and service those vehicles. We have a car rental business, which has about 26% market share in the country. We sell value-added products once you bought a car, whether they be new or pre-owned. We sell products like service plans, maintenance plans, insurance, all the other products that go with it. And then lastly, we have an aftermarket parts business in the form of Midas and Alert Engine Parts that sells parts and accessories to cars that are outside warranty. So that integrated model is what helps us, and the agile management saw that we have a problem. Please adjust your model quickly, convert the assets into cash. And that's why we managed to convert our cars and our parts and our spares into 5 billion rand worth of cash in 6 months.
Yeah.
To put that into context for you, Simon,
yes,
despite COVID and the gloom and the dooms that we read about every day, our group in South Africa sold 41,000 new cars in 6 months. And we sold 39,000 pre-owned cars in 6 months. So you add all that up, that's like 80,000 cars in 6 months. But again, it's giving the customer what they want, making available small cars, making available small SUVs, medium-sized SUVs, good quality pre-owned vehicles, and making their life easy when they come into your dealership to buy. So that means making sure that the IT works, the application with the banks work quickly, and getting the cars on the road for them. So, you know, it's an agile management team with good stock and with good footprint around the country that allowed us to do what we did.
Did you see much shopping down, perhaps from a more expensive model to perhaps a slightly cheaper model,
very
or perhaps
much so,
even to a pre-owned model?
Yes, 100%. So you're right on that, because a lot of the people that could afford a 500,000 rand car now went for maybe 400,000. Mm-hmm. So that's why I say that the entry-level vehicles did well. The small SUVs did well. The medium-sized SUVs did well. The premium vehicles, obviously, they were stressed. I mean, that side of the business became smaller. And then you're 100% correct that the pre-owned market was very active for us. We virtually sold one pre-owned vehicle for one new vehicle. And previously, that used to be like a 0.7 and a 0.6. We virtually went to one for one.
Okay, and now we're in a position, and you know, and I note from your dividend, not just, you know, as you mentioned, massive cash flow, and you mentioned the why, no dividend in 2020. You've come out with a good dividend at this point in the equation. That to me says that, you know, I don't want to, you know, not confidence, but that you're positioned, and you think to yourself, 2021 maybe not going to be the easiest year, but the group is well positioned for the year.
100%. So that means the debt to equity at 24%. Historically, we're at 60 and 70%. We're at 24. So we've cut the debt accordingly. We're managing the stock. So, and we've cut our costs accordingly. So if we continue doing what we're doing, the customers continue coming to our stores. We don't go into lockdown fives. We stay at threes and twos, and stock's available. Then we're back to a new normal. It's not pre-COVID. Yes, I would agree with you. But you can say we're at 80% pre-COVID.
Car rental, you've got Europe Car and Tempest in South Africa, as you mentioned, two of the big brands in the market. I'm imagining is still struggling. I mean, my activity is back to normal, but my holiday activity isn't. We're not getting foreign tourists yet, and I imagine business travel still under pressure.
So that business used to carry 22,000 to 23,000 cars in its fleet. Well, we've dropped that down to 13,000, 14,000 cars. So we've dropped that. Automatically, you've dropped your cost base.
Mm-hmm.
You've dropped the people. I've cancelled 19 leases for my sites.
Mm-hmm.
So we've cut our cloth accordingly in terms of fleet, in terms of costs, in terms of people. We brought the business down to 50% of what it was. At 50%, you're fine. When the market grows, we'll employ more people, we'll get more cars, and we'll grow our business. But right now, we've cut our cloth accordingly. And it's still profitable, not as it was previously, but by the same token, I've reduced the capital.
Yeah.
I've reduced the number of cars, I've reduced the rentals and the people.
Last quick question. Obviously, you know, we're seeing a lot happening online. You know, I've shopped for cars online, but then I go into the dealership to conclude the deal. Have you sort of moved more into the online space, or is it still very much a face-to-face when a purchase is made?
People are doing a lot of homework at home. So they know exactly what they want. When they come to your dealership, they're not spending 5 hours looking for a car. They've chosen the car. They've chosen the color. It's just a question of the paperwork and getting the deal sorted out. And that's why we've developed a portal called motors.cars. You can, in that portal, you'll get 22 OEMs cars. That means you'll get all of the variety. Then you get new and you get pre-owned of all the stock that we have. So you've got a fantastic variety on the platform, sitting in your study. You can choose what you want. You can, once you've chosen, you can even put your bank finance application in. All you then have to do is come to the dealership you choose, closest to your house. Your car will be ready there. You sign the paper and you walk off. So that's why we went for these type of platforms whereby people can use technology to expedite their buying as well.
We'll leave that there. That's Motors CEO Osman Arbery. So really appreciate your time.
Finance Minister Tito Mboweni will deliver his much-awaited 2021 budget to Parliament on Wednesday, the 24th of February. Join MoneyWeb in a free webinar with economists Dr. Iraj Abidian and Isaiah Mhlanga and tax expert Yolandi Esterhazen for a post-budget day analysis on Thursday, the 25th of February at 11 a.m. Go to moneyweb.co.za to register and take part in the conversation.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Bernard Burson. He is CEO of Bidcorp. They had results out for 6 months ending December. We saw revenue down 10.9%, headline earnings down 46.2%, no dividend declared for the period. Bernard, appreciate your very early morning. If I look at calendar 2020, that second half of the year, markedly better than the first half. Towards the end, however, you started hitting some sort of second waves, particularly in your UK market as we went back into lockdown, but still a much better period than the first calendar half of the year.
Morning. It's actually afternoon for me, so it's much easier for me than for you. Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And, you know, we say it was a commendable performance. I think we're understating how reasonable the performance actually was. But I think the world was in a far more panicked and uncertain phase when we first went into this crisis. And as unfortunately it's dragged on, people have learned how to adapt to it much better than before. So, you know, even when there are strict lockdowns, we are still seeing levels of activity, obviously far, far more subdued. But there's a much greater ability to navigate the crisis. So definitely the second half of the calendar year was much improved on the first half. Bearing in mind that the first half of the year only really, you know, went bad from late March.
Sure.
So you only had three awful months in there, whereas from July to December, there were 6 months of pandemic chaos.
And certainly you've seen areas, I mean, you talk about Australasia, sort of, you know, activity getting back to normal, and that makes sense. We see the pictures of life returning to normal there. EMs as well. What struck me was the number of countries. How many markets do you operate in around the world?
We're in about 35 countries. I say about because I just actually haven't counted recently. So we see a lot of variation. But I think that gives us the benefit of not panicking too much because you know what it's going to return back to.
Yeah.
And we're fortunate. We've seen it in China. We've seen it in New Zealand, Australia, in the Middle East, in Singapore. Life returns back to normal. We're creatures of habit. And yes, obviously there's going to be some adaptation to the new normal, but it's certainly not going to be this dystopian fantasy that some people might talk about.
Yeah, you mentioned that in your results, and you say you believe that in essence things are going to get back to where we were. We are going to start going out again. And one of the other points you make is around potential acquisitions. I imagine there's obviously a lot of businesses out there which are struggling way more perhaps than Bidcorp is, and quality businesses. Are you seeing opportunities perhaps for acquisitions, even if sort of smaller bolt-on acquisitions?
Not really. I mean, I know that sounds counterintuitive, but you've got there's a lot of government support, there's a lot of bank support out there for businesses. So you've got businesses who are on some type of life support at the moment, and vendors are in no rush to to sell their businesses, their lifetime work based on COVID type results. And they'd rather say, well, let's really struggle through this, get back to some type of normality and get a reasonable price for the business. So, you know, we're actually aren't seeing elevated levels of businesses out there for sale, and in deep, deep trouble. Businesses are in trouble. They are doing it tough. But I think banks are being incredibly supportive at this point in time, and governments are being very helpful as well.
Yeah, and I take your point. And they're trying to sort of come out the other side and rather sell when things are better. Bernard Berson, CEO, Bidcorp, appreciate your early morning, afternoon time, sir. The show is brought to you by Orbvest's latest investment opportunity, Medical 30. It's a multi-tenanted Class A medical office building located in Phoenix, Arizona. For more information, visit orbvest.com. Orbvest SA is an authorized financial services provider, license number 50483. Our poll today, back to the motors conversation. Did you buy a car during lockdown? Nope, you didn't need one. Fair enough. Nope, money was tight. Yes, new, or yes, secondhand. You'll find that on our MoneyWeb Twitter account, at MoneyWeb. I didn't, but I didn't need a car. I had one. But I'm curious if folks who were out there perhaps shopping, and maybe you were shopping down. Remember today, straight after budget, I'll be on SAFM with an expert panel to unpack the details. That's it for today. Live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available from 7 a.m. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Cordura, Nicole, and Masekla, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.